Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
This is part one of our very special New Game Plus long play podcast. New Game Plus are here in the studio for this very special podcast here on Sci-Fi and Squeam. It is great to have you here, guys. And we have...
Jason O'Callaghan.
Do you remember your name?
Yeah, I do. But I don't know if we went to surnames. But no, executive producer / host, I guess.
And creator, really.
Well, yeah, I guess.
You gave birth.
I did.
Went into labour for 6 years.
Yeah, for 6 years, yeah.
Woo, 6 years. That's a long labour, more than an elephant.
Well, that's true. That is true. At least I didn't have to carry it around for another 2 years on top of that as well. That'd be interesting.
But it's the weaning, too. Yeah. You're off the weaning now?
Almost. We're getting there. Yeah. The boys are finally kind of, and the team's finally stepping into their roles.
We have Kirsty back again.
Yes, I can't seem to stay away, can I? I'm always here.
Good.
Yes. Oh, well, I love being here. We love you, Sonia. That's why
Thank
we're here.
You. So, feeling the love.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let's look at New Game Plus. First of all, when is the birthday? Do you guys?
It's the 23rd.
Oh, really?
Yes. The 23rd of May was the first. 23rd of April was the first airing in Channel 31 in Melbourne.
So, wow, okay.
So it's a Tuesday this year, obviously. It was a Monday last year. And that's technically the anniversary.
Technically.
We managed 50 episodes in just under 52 weeks. One a week it's been a hard slogan. Without the crew we have, it wouldn't have happened. It's as simple as that. I mean, there's only so much I can drive based on my spite and my will to make this happen. But I've had some good people supporting me, which is lucky. So.
How does it feel?
I knew we'd get there. It was more a matter of, for us, the first year was establishing we could do it. I wanted to make sure we had runs on the board. We could say to all the publisher contacts, I'd cultivated all of the media contacts that I could say, this is what we do. This is what we're proud of doing. This year for us is going to be a bit different. Like this year I want to really kind of stretch the boundaries of what we do and mix it up a bit. But for the first year it was runs on the board, doing E3, going to LA for conferences, Japan, doing all these big international events so that we could say now we're an international show. And it's been good. So.
See, we'd already had experience on a previous show and I think that really helped us as well. Yeah.
When you say 6 years, I'm thinking, 6 years you've been going.
Well, no, we did a show previous, Level 3 for, that was 247 episodes.
Yep.
And then... We're no strangers to doing it back and forth. We'll do the diplomatic John Lennon, Paul McCartney route and say creative differences. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it. I wanted to keep on going and the other person didn't. And spite fuels me. So if you really want to make me do something, tell me I can't do it. And I'll guarantee you I'll do it. Like that's just my motivating factor in life. It's as simple as that.
I think that's a good way to be, of course. Yeah. We should have explained what New Game Plus is. For those who don't know, they should know when they're listening to this podcast. Mm-hmm. But Kirsty, tell us... community? What is?
It's actually really hard to encapsulate in a sentence, I suppose, because obviously our main premise is video games. So, you know, our bread and butter is the reviews that we do, but we've really wanted to expand New Game Plus, hence the plus on the end of the name. We really wanted to go further into the culture and the community surrounding video games. So going into things such as anime, we attend a lot of conventions. We've currently moved into tabletop gaming as well. So just trying to really provide, you know, information and coverage for all aspects of a gamer's life, I suppose, because it isn't just gaming. You know, there are other things involved. So we've been conducting interviews with people, obviously going overseas to games conferences and also Japan in general, which is connected to anime and connected to Japanese culture, which are two things that are quite popular in the video gaming community.
I remember when you came back from Japan. It was pretty exciting.
Oh, it was amazing. Well, I know he loved it. It was his first time. So
it was my second time overseas at all, and then my first time to Japan, and it was I'll be there every year. I'll justify it.
Did that trip sort of cement for you guys that you were on the right? You felt like you were on the right path, because it was pretty exciting and important, the show, for your show.
We did LA first, so we did E3 which is in June. And so we did that America first, and that was, you know, it was the first one overseas. We got to do the first round of like international interviews, got to meet some amazing kind of game devs and stuff like that, got to drink with Mario in the hotel bar.
Yep,
and
that
he was
intense.
Like the voice, and he was great, but as he gets drunker, he slips into Mario, so all of a sudden he's breaking.
Right, I suppose he would do that, might get a bit
Well, yeah, when you've been doing it for 20 years, I suppose you just becomes part of you, doesn't it? Yeah.
But there was some stuff surrounding that trip with my current work at the time that really kind of put the dampener on it. Like, it really made it, I don't know, like it was more of a struggle to get happen, like to make happen, than it needed to be. And if anything, that it was great that we got the contacts, we got to go meet all these people, we got to film all this content. But yeah, there was just this downer sitting over the whole time. When we went to Japan, we wanted to, it was somewhere I wanted to go for my whole life, and just kind of stepping off the plane, that was it. You know what I mean? Like, I'd fallen in love. And, you know, it's not that I'm blind to the promise Japan has, because it's not the perfect country, but it was just, the culmination of the last kind of 27 years of my existence, you know, growing up watching Samurai Pizza Cats and things like that, and all this stuff from when I was a kid and Dragon Ball, and you know, and then seeing it there and, it's, and the things that surprised you, you know, like the some of the old school stuff they still do, and That was it. When I realized that, you know, here we are traveling to film video game content, and that's kind of always what I wanted to do.
So. And your experience there too was pretty amazing.
Oh yes,
I mean, but you've been there a few times, Kirsten.
I'd been there once before, about 2 years or 3 years before we went again. So I had already done the amazing kind of wondrous experience, but the last time I went with people who were not gamers, not interested in anime, so I had experienced very much the touristy side of Japan, so going to all the temples and the hot springs and the top of Mount Fuji. So going this time, it was all video games. We were stopping at every arcade on the corner. We had to extend my luggage because I was winning so many prizes out of the claw machines and skill testers, you know. So I got to experience the video game side of it, where it was that kind of the more subcultural movement, not just the geishas and the temples. It was, you know, arcades.
Yeah, we got to explore the subculture that we're most interested in. And like, the temples are amazing, and the hot springs are all fantastic and things, but being able to go in Akihabara, which is like the technology.
The nerd capital.
Seeing all the retro games and all that kind of stuff was just amazing.
It must have been amazing. I mean, it seems like their subculture is their main culture too. It's more mainstream in here.
It's actually a very interesting observation, because, of course, we think that, you know, because that's the part of Japan we encounter as people who are interested in sci-fi, people who are interested in pop culture. But in Japan, it still is very much a subculture. It's just a lot bigger over there.
And it's a little bit more accepted. Like, it's a little bit, like, it's not, it's, oh, you're just an otaku, which, you know, it's still an insult,
but it's not, I think, much like here, how, you know, different parts of subcultures have become more accepted here, like, you know, how
the whole geek nerd thing.
Geek nerd thing is now more accepted. It's like that in Japan as well. It used to be associated with, you know, a lot of dark and dangerous things, and now it's become much more open. But I think they've also realised the tourist potential, so they're not going to turn away all the hundreds of thousands of visitors who come to Japan solely to experience that kind of geek culture.
Wonderful. Now let's look back into the hourglass of time, back to New Game Plus, and I just want to know how you discovered each other and how this team developed.
Well, it's interesting.
Can you recall that?
Well, okay, so it's hard because, I mean, it starts pretty much in level 3 days. I was working at Blockbuster as a, you know, 19, 20-year-old kid. Someone who's volunteering at a video game show said, oh, you should come down and try out. And I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe. I went in there, and next day I had the quote-unquote job. worked on that for 6 years, and over the time we met people who had either emailed us or, you know, in Kirsty's case, we met at was it eGames?
eGames Expo, yeah. Yes.
And she was working for the, you were at Swing Gamers then, weren't you? With your
I think I was at Swinburne, but I was involved with the Swing Gamers. Yeah. So
by that time, we'd started building a crew of people. Jamie's probably the longest running, actually, out of pretty much everyone. And he's been with us the longest. And then, you know, Liam and like a lot of our production guys got on board not long after that. And it's just kind of been, we've just built up this crew. And then when it came time to do New Game Plus, they all came with me. And it was, that was the kind of the extent of it. But it's amazing all the different avenues we're seeing. I mean, Donald, one of our other guys, our new guy, quote unquote, he interviewed me on SYNFM, and then I said, would you like to come down and do some stuff on a podcast for us? And he said, that's cool. The Weird Retro guys, we met Kane when we went to his shop, and then he introduced us to Alex / Serby from there. You got interviewed by Mick, whose job you then took.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, he interviewed you like the first, and that's what we said.
That would have been eGames like 2006.
Yeah. No, it was the second one, and Bob. That was when Bob said, he goes, "Oh, you should get her on the show." I'm like, "Oh yeah, she can't. She wouldn't be bothered." And then, lo and behold, like a year, not even a year and a half later, it's like, "You want to come down and do stuff?" Because Mick doesn't want to do it anymore. And from that, we just built up. Timmy was a 17-year-old fan when he started. And this is how long ago we're talking, 4 years. 17-year-old kid sent us an email, said, "I love watching, me and my friend love watching your show. I'm the only one who gets Channel 31, so he comes around to my house and we watch it every day." It's like, that's cool. And then he sent us some stuff. He goes, "Oh, I'd like to come down and do some stuff." I'm like, "Yeah, come down, just, you know, just send it through and blah, blah, blah." And then he goes, "Oh, I'd like to do a review if you'd like." I said, "You do it." And watching him come, when he started, it'd take him an hour and a half to do a review because the nerves would get to him and he'd be just watching him now, I'm like, I don't even need to be on the show anymore. Like, between these two, it's good. I get to kind of sit back and do nothing now, so...
Yeah, so do you see yourself as, is it executive producer? Yeah, do you use those sort of roles, or do you guys not
have
that?
He's just daddy.
Yeah, I'm daddy. Yeah, I'm Papa Bear, yeah. I get it, like, I only really pull rank when it's dealing with publishers and stuff, or when like an industry contact is. I say, "Oh, well, who are you?" And, "Well, I'm executive producer." It's the only time I've ever really had to pull rank. But amongst our guys, they know they can come to me with their problems, but I'm not going to be a happy dad if they haven't tried to fix it themselves first. But, you know, most of our guys are pretty good now, and they kind of, the segments kind of run themselves. And with Liam and Prospect, I'm going to call him Prospect. Yeah. I know his name's David.
He doesn't have a real Prospect, name.
Yeah. Between them, you know, we can always get things done. Like, it's never a consideration. And that's the great thing about it. They'll say to me, "I want to do this." I'm like, "That sounds fine. Go talk to production. How's it going to get done?" Production talks to them about how it's going to get done. And then we go from there. And, you know, with the expansions and what we're doing, even, you know, like, young Shane, probably he's the most shy of the group. He's starting to kind of come out into his own skin, and it's, to me, if anything, that's the point I'm enjoying the most, is, you know, all the old hats are keeping on, and the young kids are really stepping up and embracing the role, and that's what I want to see.
So, I think that's really important to our show as well, is because we want to keep our connection with community quite strong. Having these young kids come up and remind us old fogies about how things really happen in the real world and what the youth are interested in nowadays is something that helps us keep fresh as well, because they bring ideas to the table. You know, I mean, Jason's been involved with TV for 6-7 years, and I've been involved with this TV show for almost 3 years now. So, you know, we sometimes maybe just don't see it the way they see it, because we're older and we've been in this, you know, you get stuck, you know, you get blinders, and then they bring forward the fresh new ideas.
I mean, plus as well, like, we are effectively, everyone who's been on, I've never hired anyone in the sense that I've pursued people. I said, "Would you like to work with us?" 9 times out of 10, they've said yes. But I've never, it's always been people approach me from the community.
And it's never been a position's opened who would like to fill it.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. It's always been, "I would like to do this." It's like, "Well, what's it going to give us that we don't already have?" And they'll tell me, and I'm like, "All right, come and do it." You know what I mean? I've never been about owning someone's idea, and if they go and make money from it, well, they go and make money from it, as long as they remember old Grandpa Jason when they do it. But that's what I want to.
The Zimmer frame.
Yeah. You know, and that's me.
Flashing
that.
Lights on it.
Yeah.
It's got a little mirror, the upskirt mirror as well. Have you seen that? Yeah.
Well, I got it in Japan. I can't say that, I'm getting in trouble. But look, and that's me. What it's about is seeing. You know, we had to get some T-shirt designs done, so I approached our community. You know, I said straight away,
"Who can do it?"
I said, two of the people I knew were really good artists. Mm. One submitted his, the other one's coming through, and I've seen the roughs of the one coming through. It's awesome. You know what I mean? And, like, I could never have done it. You know, Prospect, our main guy, because he does a lot of the TV graphic stuff. He hasn't got
the
time.
Why is he called Prospect? Sorry. What's this about? Yeah.
So we work with Monash every year for their computer games boot camp event. Every year. So I've hosted that for nearly 5 years now.
And you're old now.
Yeah, I know. And so we worked with that, and David was someone who approached us early days. This was like, you know, after the second year or something, and he would just started going to Monash and things like that. And he was like, oh, I'd love to help out because I'm learning graphic design. I was like, yeah, it was fun. And Sons of Anarchy was big at the time, and so you're the prospect member. Right. And the problem is now that he's like one of the main production heads, he's still the prospect because I can't drop the name. Like, if I stop saying it, I'm sure everyone else will.
He kind of embraced it though. Like, he really actually liked that nickname, and because literally everybody who he worked with called him that, it stuck. It's actually very hard for us to kind of go back to David, his real name, because even he refers to himself as prospect.
I send emails and it'll be, who am I sending it to? I'm sending it to an industry contact. Contact David. If I'm sending it to someone who knows me, or it's like, just tell prospect, you know, like it just comes down there. And so look, it's one of those things where we'll have a conversation, someone's like, I'll just ask David, and literally I will be the only person who says prospect, because I just can't see him as anything else, you know.
It's very hard when we're on stage when it was prospect, Limerick and Oz.
And Simi.
Oh yeah, it was prospect, Simi and Oz, and these are the three nicknames that are stuck the hardest amongst our crew, and just trying to remember their real names was impossible because we just don't know them any other way.
I've still got them saved in my phone as
I don't have them as I don't have real names, no.
Interesting. No, that's really cool. And I've counted 18 people. Is it 18 people?
It would be about that. If you really spread the net pretty wide, it would be with everyone who contributes. And I want to make it wider. Like, I really want to effectively become a platform for people. That, you know, we'll still make our show. We'll still do what we do. But if people have an idea, come to us. I'll provide them with the avenue to put it out. You know, as long as they involve our crew in it. You know what I mean? Like, to me, I really want to see if we can make Australia that hub for community. But so, you know, 18 for me is not enough. We need more production. We need more, you know, this. We need more that. We need lots more people.
Well, it just makes sense. I mean, it's evolving into something that's quite a, like you said, a hub sort of organism. Yep. And you can't hold all the balls at once, you know. Yep. Like, otherwise, my experience has been, you start dropping them, you can't keep up. You've got to find those key people, or those people will approach you or become just turn up.
And that's honestly where I'm at. At this point of the year, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, coming into the end of the season, quote unquote, you know, the end of the 50 episodes. So many ideas are getting pitched at me. Some of them said, I can't handle all this. That's why we've taken a 4-week break, because, we had to, because I'm like, well, if we really want to readjust the set, we really want to approach this idea, we really want to do this stream, we really want to do everything. We can't do it all at once. Like, we've got to layer it in a point where someone's in charge of this, and someone's in charge of that, and someone's in charge of that, and they report to me, and that's the end of it. You know, and we're finally getting that organisational structure now. Before we could do it on the seat of our pants. Now it's a little bit harder. Like, if we really want to make it serious, we really want to extend to the community, get them involved. You know, get the resources we need to make content for them. We have to be smart about it, and that's where we're at now. So,
so you're taking a 4-week break.
4-week break.
It's not really a break, though, is it?
Well,
really,
you don't think so, because the past couple of weeks for me anyway, just been hardcore answering emails and organising events and organising, you know, just the behind the scenes things. Because the reason we took the break now is because now is a very quiet time in video games. We've had a massive end of last year. We had a massive start to this year, and then this month there's literally maybe like 2 or 3 releases of note. So it's been like, well, perfect, let's stop now, you know, because then have a breather, get our stuff back in order, and then go back when the season starts again, when more big games kind of start coming out.
That's it though. With Supernova recently, we've still made a web video for release, because we just can't help ourselves, because we're gluttons for punishment. So, you know, like, it's you know, we got the interview with Gail Simone and a couple other things on there. So it's, we just want to generate content, and we're at the point now where we need to have those people who can help us do it. And that's a good place to be. You know, if the problem is the only thing holding back our creativity is the people, well, we can always find more people. Do you know what I mean? Like, and that's where we're lucky. So,
well, I think something like New Game Plus, you look at the website, people can go to, of course, and we can do all that in a moment.
That's all right.
All that sort of address stuff, but people can go there and you can see that there is so much activity going on there. It is such a busy site, but you want that. You want to be able to engage people, and, you know, like you were saying with younger people, hey, it's like, if you don't have a lot going on and you're not engaging them, they're going to look elsewhere. And it's great that you've been able to hook some of these people into.
Well, games is also such a, I mean, games are such a big thing at the moment. I mean, it's an industry that earns more money than the box office worldwide.
Yes.
It's a growing industry, but then it's a contracting industry.
Yeah.
It's such a constantly evolving, constantly changing thing that there just always is that much happening. There's always something we're going to miss, because it's global and that's hardcore.
That is probably the other point with our expansion idea as well, is that, I mean, there's only so, we only get, if we play it from the point of view, we only get 26 minutes a week. There's only so much we album cover. But if we play from the point of view of that is the almanac, that is the bits and pieces of all the other stuff that we do that you come and watch, well then fantastic. You know what I mean? Like if we make a comic segment, well then we'll put part of that into the show. If we make a retro gaming segment, we put part of that into the show. And I think that's where we're at with it. We want to make all these other great things, all these other great web videos for people to enjoy. Mm-hmm. You know, get behind this, you know, and watch those and really enjoy those and I guess, you know, provide us with the feedback and the audience that we need and then go from there. And then everything else can go into the show as a kind of a Reader's Digest version, if you will. So it's pie in the sky.
I'm speechless. Do you realise how much effort this is being? Do you ever think to yourself, why am I doing this?
It is always funny, like, because we go to our full-time jobs. I mean, this is a gig we don't get paid for. So we also, the hard thing is we have to balance all of this responsibility on top of real-time work. And so you go to real-time work, real life, and, you know, the people at work kindly ask, oh, how was your weekend? Or how have you been? And I list about like eight things. And the fact is after work I have to go to filming twice a week, and then basically every other night we're in meetings or we're, you know, coming to events or we're doing this, doing that. So this idea of having a home, this idea
free
of
time.
Sleeping and, you know, actually, you know, relaxing is very foreign, very foreign to us.
So why? Okay, I'm going to ask you each because you're both mad.
Clinically mad, I would say.
And I totally understand that, of course, because I'm crazy too.
Yeah.
Firstly, Kirsty, why are you doing this?
Well, I love video games. I guess that's the first and foremost reason. I find it really fun. And I've always really enjoyed, I don't know, working in a community. So before New Game Plus, I and Level 3, I was part of Swing Gamers, which was the Swinburne Games students. We all kind of got together and I was kind of the mother of it. I was, I guess, you know, I kind of helped lead the group. I organised the group to attend functions. We represented Swinburne at events. You know, we did a lot as a community. So I really enjoyed that kind of role of helping people achieve things, of, you know, working to a community of video gamers. And so when this opportunity came up with Level 3 New Game Plus, I was like, excellent, this is a way I can continue doing Swing Gamers because I had graduated from uni and thus no longer had that platform. Yeah. And I've continued to do it then. I mean, I don't do it for the fame. I don't do it for the money, surely. And I just do it because I really enjoy it. The people I work with are really good people. I really love the industry and I love video games, really. So I'm completely crazy because I'm driven by the passion.
Well, it's
of
a
it,
win-win for you. Just may not seem to normal people out there that you know what you get out of that, but the enjoyment is the key.
Yeah, and the people I work with. Yeah, I think that's the biggest reason for me.
I know a lot of our crew, particularly being younger, they get a lot of the when are you going to stop mucking around. And, I mean, I still cop it now. It's like, when are you going to stop playing these stupid video games? It's like, well, when are you going to stop watching MasterChef? Like,
when are you stop kind of saying that?
Yeah, we can play this game all day. It doesn't faze me. And really, you know, that's the hard part for a lot of the other guys is because, you know, they've got to deal with that on a more like continued basis, whereas my family's always been to do what you're going to do. I'm like, yeah, no problem, I will. And that's
when you're going to grow up.
Yeah. And I like that. I've never got that from anyone, like of anything. And yeah, my grandmother particularly has always been supportive of me in the sense that she just said, well, do you really think you can do it? I said, well, I think I can. She went, well, go then. That was kind of the extent of it. And if I failed, it was never, well, you failed, you're a piece of trash, stop doing it. It was, well, let's see what we can do about making it work next time. And it's amazing how having that kind of, you know, that supportive network behind you, it makes all the difference in the world. You know, and I think that's, coming from my point of view, that's the part for me that drives me on is the fact that, you know, I've got, you know, full-time job. I mean, my break, I'm effectively working 7 days a week. Now that I'm not filming, I'm working everything I can to make money
to pay for the next round of the show. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's, to me, I do it every time. Like, no problem every time because I think that's what I want to do. And realistically, when it gets to it, I don't even want to make millions of dollars off it. I've never been driven by money. It's something that's never echoed with me when people say, don't you want to make money from it? I'm like, not really.
Asking the wrong question.
Exactly. And I think that's, you want to make something that makes money. You don't want to make money straight. I mean, if your intention is to make money, your audience is going to see it and you're not going to enjoy it because you're not doing it for the reasons you want to do it for. For us, we are at that point where we obviously need to expand. We need to get these resources. And I've got plenty of ways. We've got plenty of ways we think we can do it without being those guys. You know, like, and traditional marketing's dying anyway. Like, the old-fashioned ad sales are dying. And it's better to engage directly with the people who enjoy what you're doing and want to do that and want to get on board. And, you know, as a community group, that's always been my thing is if we can offer a different voice, a kind of a... another opinion that's not just... I think games journalists sometimes take it for granted how good they've got it. They don't pay for games. I mean, they don't pay for games. I bought 3 games last year, and I'm so grateful for that fact, in the sense that... Not that I'm grateful to the publishers, and therefore I'm going to give them good reviews or whatever the case may be, but... My God, working 5 hours of your life to play this game, and it's a piece of crap, and people are going to say that it's great because they got it for free. Well, that doesn't compute.
Right.
Well, and no matter what, I've always said, no matter what, you know, how successful we are, how unsuccessful we are, I would always work some kind of pleb job, even if it was one day a week, just to keep me in the real world, because you've got to assess the fact that I'm spending 5 hours of my life working for someone else who I hate to pay for this game, like to give that framework of this is what I'm doing. To, you know, and this is the opinion I'm expected to give, but I don't have that perspective. And I think a lot of, you know, games journalists sometimes lose sight of that in a really big way. And it's kind of sad, you know what I mean? Like, the people have kind of come to trust you, and then you're just like, yeah, it's a good game. It's like, well, is that really all you've got? Yeah, it's fine, you know?
I think it's that grassroots. You've still got that grassroots sensibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you've brought that into this organism, this vehicle called New Game Plus, obviously.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can't be honest to yourself, or you can't keep that integrity if you don't have some ability to be critical of what is out there in the marketplace, because there must be so much crap out there too.
That is the hard part. And I'll be honest.
How to endure it.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to review and go through the whole thing.
That's probably one of the hardest thing.
I'd
say that's probably the hardest thing about our job, or my job at least. I
because these games can be long. I mean, what's the longest time you've spent on a game?
To review, to play
it right to the beginning, to the end.
I think mine's probably... Now, I don't play many of the AAA titles, which tend to be some of the longer games, but I think my longest was probably 20 to 22 hours for Assassin's Creed, one of the Assassin's Creeds that I had to play for review.
And so you had a deadline. Did you have to do yourself?
Yes, I had to complete with it generally within a week. I usually have to finish on top of normal filming, on top of providing a mobile phone review, and on top of real life work. I had to finish that game within a week, I think. Oh, actually, The Sims was probably closer to maybe 25 hours, and that was in 4 days?
SimCity, you mean?
SimCity, sorry, yeah.
Right. And so when you're reviewing, because I have no clue about anything to do with video games, especially what you have to go through and the time involved, what do you do to review it? How do you actually do that?
Well, I just play it, really. I guess I tend to keep a more critical eye on my environments. Mm. So as I play the game as I normally would, perhaps I'd probably spend longer maybe trying to run into walls or do unusual things to see how the game reacts as well. Okay. To kind of go, okay, well, obviously I need to get from A to B in the quickest amount of time. But by doing that, I'm missing out on things that could go wrong, or, you know, running into walls.
So you're testing it in a way.
You test the game a little bit as well, just to see how it goes. But yeah, I'm usually keeping an eye, like, I'm the worst. I look at spelling errors and things like that in the speech that comes up with me.
Grammarati coming
through. That's the teacher in me coming through. I tend to maybe become a bit more hyper aware of the game I'm playing, like trying to remember things a little bit more. Earlier on, I used to keep notes, so I used to have a notepad next to me, write down notes of anything I noticed that was particularly good, particularly unusual, or particularly bad.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I just immerse myself in the game experience, generally for probably no more than maybe 5 or 6 hours at a time, then take a break, sit back and go, okay, this is what I've, you know, to myself, this is what I've experienced, take a break, and then go back into and see if my experience changes as well.
Okay, interesting. I just thought you would have to stop it every few minutes and go over it again.
Sometimes it does, because particularly if you notice something very unusual or something maybe particularly bad, you want to go back and see if that was a one-off.
Also thematically, I think, like, it's a big one. It's like, did they really just, is that their twist? Is this their grand?
Is that it?
Yeah. Or even if they do something really dumb, like the new Injustice game, in a kind of mini review, a lot of it I really enjoyed, and then there was some real kind of awkward depictions of, like, Wonder Woman and stuff, and I'm like, this is a bit... You didn't really have to do that, did you? Like, and it's just one of those things that you notice because you're playing it, but otherwise it was fantastic. And I think that's the hard part, is even though something's great, there's always going to be something that takes the gloss off, but it doesn't make it bad. Do you know what I mean?
It might let it down a bit.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, it's just, that was unfortunate, but otherwise it's really good. And I think the big thing is it depends on the game. Like, if you're playing like a fighting game which has a very simple storyline, well, you just smash through that really quickly. But then you play some multiplayer to see how the multiplayer plays, and you play some of this mode and some of that mode to get a feel for it. If it's a shooter, you pretty much just go straight through story into multiplayer. It all comes down to what kind of game you're reviewing. iPhone stuff, I mean, realistically, you don't need any more than 2 or 3 hours to know what you're going to talk about it on.
Well, actually, I spent, what was it, 8 or 9 hours on one game? That McGovern's Curse, because the story was that long. That's probably the longest I've spent on a game, just because to get through the story, which is pretty intense.
But I mean, Brad pulls regularly 50 to 70 because he does JRPGs, which go for way too long. I mean, I average kind of 12 to 15 a game, like hours that I have to review, but I've pulled 60, 70 or something.
It varies so heavily. And I guess one of the harder things, I suppose, to remember is, particularly when you're actually reviewing it, the problem I have is not to be too critical, is sometimes because maybe I've been doing it for quite a while, and because I get games given to me so freely, again, it's like, well, hang on, you know, I can't be that mean to this game. I'm looking at it from a perspective of someone who's a teacher of video games.
So you're looking at it as a gamer.
I need to look at it, you know, not to kind of also justify why I say these things. So not just sit there and rattle, well, this had terrible graphics, terrible sound, terrible. Slow down, you know. Why did I think it was terrible? You know, to remember that just because I may think it's bad doesn't mean it's bad.
And the big thing for me is, like anyone who sends us emails, I will put as much effort into giving you good constructive like criticism as much as you give to me. It's the same as the kind of the developer relationship. I may not like the way a level went or something. I said, the pacing was a bit off. They really could have done with a bit more polish. But you've always got to try and frame it in the framework of what the developer went through and what the gamers go through. Like, you've got to develop. If you do a review and you're talking about what you liked and what you hated, and you're only talking to yourself, well, it's effectively masturbation. Like, you might as well talk to, if you're not talking to an audience, if you're not trying to relate to the people who are watching you, well, then why bother? Like, you know, what's the point? You're not isolated in this bubble. You exist in the world, so you've got to pretend that the world is. You don't pretend. You've got to realize that the world is there. So.
Wow. You guys really have your job cut out for you. This volunteer, this is a job of passion and love.
Yeah, I think obviously. it's a passion. Yeah. I think more than anything else is, neither of us would be sitting here if we didn't truly love what we were doing. Yeah. And it has its moments where it gets really hard. You wonder why you're doing it, you know, when things just fall to pieces. But then you have those golden moments, like standing at the doors to E3, like standing at the doors to Tokyo Game Show, and even just standing in front of, you know, who was the guy you met at Supernova last year that you loved?
Oh, Billy West.
Billy West. And then meeting Elvira, you know.
You nearly called her Boobrella,
didn't
you?
I nearly did, yeah. Sure, it's been a long week. You know, it gets to moments like that and you go, no, it was worth it. All those late nights, all the late night drives,
all the drives to Sydney, half asleep on the Hume Highway doing it.
We'll be doing that in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of does pay off when you, and also when you get to play the games as well.
I'm going to say, like, to be fair, like, a lot of people give the publishers a lot of crap, you know, EA is the devil, well, yeah, whatever. But I've never had them call me on I've had them call me on a review only if we've made a factual error. Like, if somebody said something that wasn't correct, they've said, well, I'd rather you correct that. I'm like, yeah, that's fine, we'll wear it. But I say to our guys, they won't ever have a go at you if you're as thorough as you can be. Like, if you really nail what your criticisms are, what you liked, what they could improve. I've never had anyone pull rank on me at that and say, we'll just never send you anything. Because, I mean, my instant response is going to be, well, don't. We'll just buy it and review it and we'll give it the same score. So that doesn't faze me. But it's been good. We've been fairly supported, but without being told what we have to say, which is nice. You know, like, there's a big worry that sometimes it gets a little bit too close, even in the movie industry and stuff. You get a little bit too close to your main reviewers, like Lee Patch, I'm sure, gets set right in front with his popcorn and his, you know, glass of wine. It's the same thing with us. It's like, we don't get golden treatment. Sure, they'll put on events and stuff like that, and we'll always try and, you know, try and separate the game from the event as much as possible. But there's a certain level of bright-eyed optimism you can have at a preview that you have to take off for a review. Like, you can go and say, this could be fantastic, this really is setting up to be great, and you can mean it and you can honestly mean it, and then you get the game and it's a piece of crap, and then you've got to pull it down.
Disappointing.
What were you sad about SimCity?
Really, the new
The latest SimCity, it wasn't the crash and burn that you kind of visualised there, but it was, for me, it was a big pull down, because it just had, like, from what I got to see, again, they do put a lot of work into these previews to make them seem as flawless as possible. They obviously, you know, they have to. They set it up so that you have the best experience you can have in the 3 minutes of gameplay you get. And then, of course, the finished product just may not
meet
those expectations.
And it's a shame, because we interviewed Jason Haber, who was one of the main developers on it. And, like, he was a really nice guy, and he really believed in the project, and he was really passionate about what they'd done. But I don't know whether something got lost in translation or they made changes afterwards and stuff, but it just didn't seem like the game that... You know,
was this the SimCity Zombie one?
No,
this is the latest SimCity Zombie which came out in March.
Yeah, I think I saw something.
Yeah, so... I thought there was a zombie one. Sorry. There probably is. There's probably going to be a zombie expansion.
But yeah, like it's interesting because we still, when we pull decent numbers, we get the credibility of our people out here. And people know that if they come to us, they're guaranteed X amount of viewers or they're guaranteed this many people will watch and engage in what they're presenting. And that's why we get approached for it, you know. And that's kind of what I say to lots of people. They're like, oh, I've just started this web blog, but, you know, Activision won't send me games. It's like, why would they? They could send it to me and get 100,000 people. I could send it to you and get 6 people and your mum. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not worth the investment on their part. So, you know,
It's similar to probably film reviewers. A lot of film reviewers complain about the amount of bloggers that now go to film review.
It's hard because gaming, you go to a film and you're guaranteed, what, an hour and a half of footage, you're sitting in front of a projected screen, you know what to expect. With gaming, I mean, you can go in, it can be 15 minutes, it repeats over and over again, you play the same kind of game to get a better score, it could be a 70 or 100 hour epic, it's very different. And I mean, the blogging thing has become huge in that, like, so many people, you know, I had someone approach me the other day saying they made a Facebook page that has 5,000 likes, and it's like, oh yeah, you know, we'll send you guys a thing because you guys only have however many. It's like, you got 100,000 people on TV watching. So did you really just condescend? Like, and you know what I mean? Like, never get ahead of yourself. And I think that's always been the thing for us. I always say to our guys, if the second you buy your own hype, you're out. Like, you know, I always say to us, if you come in here and you can be proud and you can have that little bit of ego in what you do, and you need to have it to drive you on, but don't get complacent. Don't think you're the best at what you do, because the second you do, you're done. And that's what I find a lot of bloggers do. They kind of get a little bit carried away with their own sway, and it's like, that's great, you know, it's good that you've got an audience, but what are you doing with that audience? Like, how are you engaging and how are they responding to what you're doing? If it's just like a basic engagement, well, that's fine, but don't expect anything more than that. But as you say, it seems to become more and more prevalent because the spread of viral Twitter reviews is probably something that they didn't anticipate 5 years ago. So
you're shaking your head there, Kirsty. Not a favourite thing.
We're not Twitter fans.
No, we're not Twitter fans.
Yes, you've mentioned
in the
that off here before.
Yeah, actually. Nearly gone to verbal like smackdowns with people over that, which is pretty funny. But
well, I don't tweet.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's good.
See, this is why we get on so
because
well.
I'm tech-tard, mate.
Yeah.
Well, trust me, you're not missing much. You're really not.
I feel like I am, though.
To tweet, and I'm going, oh,
I think it's like anything. It's like with Facebook and stuff, there's a great avenue to reach an audience or to let them know what's going on or what you're up to and things like that. But I mean, if something can be said in 140 characters, it's probably not worth saying. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you can cut it down to, oh yeah, I sat down in a chair today, it was pretty good,
hashtag winning.
Someone actually used that in the, like...
That was on My Kitchen Rules.
Goddamn My Kitchen Rules. Now everyone's doing it. Hashtag
winning.
All
these kitchen cooking
shows.
It's
like, goddamn, like, yeah. It was... It just comes down to, you know, I guess I'm becoming an old fogey like that, you know, from the bad old days of forums and stuff. And effectively, Facebook's becoming a giant forum with the way the changes they keep making. It's just become... It's all going back to Internet 1.0. We still have an IRC channel. So for those people who remember, like, the old chat rooms and stuff like that, they're all powered on IRC. We still have an IRC chat room. It's simple technology and it works and people can communicate.
And it's still available.
Absolutely.
It's still available on your smartphone as well. Yeah. So you can use it on your smartphone.
Okay. Yeah.
And they don't have to pay any royalties to anyone or anything like that. We'd probably still use ICQ if it was available. But
I remember those days. Good old Trillion.
Yeah, Trillion. But, you know, technology is always evolving, particularly in gaming, particularly in everything. But.
Is that the thing that's the biggest thing for you guys, is keeping up with that technology? I mean, you talked about before you managed to get these people who, obviously, you know, coming through the doors, bringing that understanding of it. For yourselves, do you ever feel like, oh, I can't keep up, or how are you riding that one?
I think there's two sides to it. The gaming side, no problem. Like, we've always got people who are on top of it as far as new computers, new stuff. You know, we've got the new Ouya coming out, the new console they made, like the Android console. We've got one of those in the crew. We're looking at Oculus, which is the new kind of virtual reality glasses that they're making.
Right.
So we've always got
virtual reality. I thought that didn't really.
The 80s are coming back.
Very Lawnmower Man. No, but and it looks amazing, and it should be good, and we're really looking forward to that. Because the other side of it is filmmaking. Like you were saying about the blogs and stuff like that, it's not that hard for people to make some crappy video they put online nowadays. You know, like back in the 80s, you know, you're using some dodgy webcam and it sounded like crap. But I mean, even your basic kit now. I mean, you buy a Canon, what is it, 5D Mark II. They're not that expensive anymore, and damn, you could do a lot worse for a camera. Do you know what I mean? And this is the thing, and people generally want their info in bite-sized pieces. That's where TV's slowly learning that's the way forward, and that's what we've been doing. And that's the hardest part to keep up with, is people are kind of, going back to the blogger point, they're kind of allocating the resources out to these, you know, small sites and small blogs and stuff like that. And it's like, if you're good at what you do, you'll still get the recognition and the credit. You'll still get flown to where, you know, if there needs to be someone, you'll still get, you know, taken to these places. But yeah, you know, competition's not a bad thing. Like, the second you get complacent, you think, oh, we're the best at what we do, well, someone will come and eat you alive. And I think that's where, you know, that's what's left us with the Telstras and the big companies of this world, because people are just happy and complacent, say, we're the best, no one's going to beat us. And then someone comes along and knocks them off. So, I don't know. I think competition's never a bad thing.
End of part one of our special long play podcast with New Game Plus. Part two coming soon.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.